This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I think I've been on every issue of the Jodcast since it began. So you can see I'm getting very old. Anyway, I'll probably sit down. That makes it slightly easier. Okay, so I think we can begin. So I'll now put my Jodcast voice on. The night sky for March 2016. Well, it's still quite a nice month to observe the night sky. The evenings are still quite long. You should always start looking over towards the west, because that part of the sky is going to disappear before too long. And if we do so, we'll find the star Vega dropping down towards the horizon. Higher up a bit, we have the two constellations of Perseus and Cassiopeia. And if you go halfway between them, there's a rather lovely object which is called, or pair of objects, they're called the double cluster in Perseus. And they're very nice to look at, either with binoculars or with a small telescope. Now, a lovely object to observe and still just visible this month is the Andromeda Galaxy. We normally tell people how to find it by starting at the top left-hand corner of the Square of Pegasus, but that's a bit low. But there's an alternative way of finding it, which is just to find the V of Cassiopeia and just follow that downwards, and you should, with a pair of binoculars, come across the Andromeda Galaxy. It's a lovely object. I'm afraid with our eyes, or even with binoculars, we don't see an awful lot of it. The outer parts, the spiral arms, are really far, far fainter, and you have to take very long time exposures to bring them up. Moving now towards the southern sky, and that's still a lovely part, one of my favourite parts of the sky. We have the constellations of Orion and Taurus, Gemini. Down on the bottom, we've got Sirius and Canis Major. You have that lovely pair of open clusters, the Hyades and the Pleiades. And the Pleiades is one of my favourite objects to look at. And I particularly love the region between Alcyone and Maia. And there's a lovely triplet of stars beside Alcyone. And between the two major stars, there's a doublet. And the upper right of those two stars is actually quite red. It's a very nice thing to look at. And then, of course, we have Orion. And below the three stars of the belt is the Sword. And in the Sword, we have the wonderful Orion Nebula. Again, with a small telescope, you can actually home in and you can see the four bright stars, the trapezium, at its heart. This is the light from those very bright blue stars, the ultraviolet light, which is exciting the hydrogen gas to make it glow that lovely red colour. If we go towards the southeastern sky, we have Leo with its bright star Regulus. Below, of course, is Jupiter, we'll come to. Down to the left is Arcturus in the constellation of Bootes. Just having a slight stop. Why do they do this to you?
Microsoft.
Thank you so much. And high up we actually have the constellation of Ursa Major with, of course, within it the Plough. And there's a very nice object in the Plough, easy to find. It's the middle star of the three stars that make up the handle, Mizar and Alcor. And they're basically a double star system. You can see with binoculars, with a small telescope, you can actually see that one of them is a double itself. And in fact, between the two, there's a little red star. So that's a nice, pretty thing to look at with a small telescope. What about the planets? Well, it's pretty obvious that this is the month to see Jupiter. It comes to opposition in the middle of the month, and it will be about 48 degrees above the horizon at around midnight. So it's visible basically all night. It starts March shining at magnitude minus 2.5. It drops slightly during the month. It's moving slowly westwards across the lower part of Leo towards the star Regulus. The size of the disk falls slightly from 44.4 to 43.7 arc seconds. Don't worry about that. With a small telescope, of course, one should easily see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere, sometimes the Great Red Spot, and up to four of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Now Saturn. It's lying in the southern part of Ophiuchus, 7 degrees up and to the left of Antares in Scorpius, and it begins its retrograde motion westwards across the heavens on March the 25th. It rises around midnight and will be high enough in the south-southeast before dawn to make out the beautiful ring system, which is now opened out to about 26 degrees, almost as wide as they ever become. The diameter increases slightly during the month, up to 17.4 arc seconds, as does the magnitude, which drops from plus 0.5 to plus 0.3. If only it were higher in the ecliptic. Its elevation never gets above 19 degrees, and so the atmosphere will hinder our view of this most beautiful planet. Now Mercury. Mercury passes behind the Sun, that's called superior conjunction, on the 23rd. So this is not a good month to observe it. But Mars, yes. It's moving eastwards relative to the stars, starting the month in Libra and moving into Scorpius on the 14th, when it will lie very close to the star Acrab, which forms the uppermost star of the fan of stars that makes up the tail of the Scorpion up to the right of Antares. It's best seen due south before dawn, but sadly, like Saturn, it'll then be only about 19 degrees above the horizon. As it's nearing us, or we're nearing it, the magnitude increases from plus 0.3 to minus 0.1 as the disk increases in size from 8.7 up to 11.7 arc seconds. Given some good seeing, which is meaning that the atmosphere is not too turbulent, some features on the disk should now be visible, such as the North Polar Cap and Syrtis Major. At opposition at the end of May, the disk will be over 15 arc seconds across. And finally, Venus. Well, Venus rises in the southeast about an hour before sunrise as March begins, but only about 25 minutes by month's end. Its magnitude stays steady at minus 3.8 as it slips into the Sun's glare. A low horizon will be needed to spot it before it becomes hidden behind the Sun in April. So finally, what about the highlights of the month? Well, as I've said, it's a superb month to observe Jupiter. Sadly, the peak elevation is actually reducing at each apparition. The features seen in the Jovian atmosphere have been changing quite significantly over the past few years. For a while, the South Equatorial Belt vanished completely, but it's now returned to its normal wide state. In the night sky page, just search for Night Sky Jodrell Bank, I give a list of the times when it's easiest to see the great red spot as it faces towards us. On March the 5th, before dawn, Saturn, Mars and Antares make quite a nice triangle in the morning sky. Three things on the 16th. Before dawn, Mars is very close to Beta Scorpii. Literally, you can hardly split them. And that's the topmost star in the Scorpion's fan. That evening, the moon occults the star 26 Geminorum, shortly after 7 p.m. The exact time, depending on your location in the UK. It's a fifth magnitude star, and it'll be occulted by the dark side of the moon, appearing again about an hour or so later. It's actually very nice to see a star suddenly disappear from view. Later that night, we have two very nice transits of Jupiter by the moons Ganymede and Io, between about 9 and 11 p.m. on the 16th. First Ganymede and then Io will be seen to transit Jupiter, with their shadows, which actually are much more obvious, trailing behind. On March the 20th, the moon will be nearing Jupiter, sometime about 10 o'clock in the evening. Finally, I usually, on the night sky page, suggest some object to look at on the moon. And this month, I've talked about the Alpine Valley. It's in a very interesting area of the moon. And the 16th and 29th are good nights to observe it, as it's close to what's called the Terminator. And that's when the shadows are best and things show up more clearly. Close to the limb, you'll find the Apennine mountain chain that marks the edge of Mare Imbrium. Towards the upper end, you should see a cleft across them, which is called the Alpine Valley. It's about 7 miles wide and 79 miles long. A thin rill runs along its length, which is quite a challenge to observe. The dark crater Plato is also visible nearby, and you might also see the shadow cast by the mountain Mons Piton, lying not far away in Mare Imbrium. It's really a very, very nice area of the moon to observe. So I hope that's given you something to look for during the month of March. Good hunting.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now for our Southern Hemisphere listeners, here's Haritina Mogashanu with the night sky in March where you are.
Welcome to the month of March. My name is Haritina Mogashanu and tonight I'm your storyteller from Space Place at Carter Observatory in Aotearoa, New Zealand. As autumn starts in the Southern Hemisphere at nightfall, half of our galaxy, the Milky Way, arches across the night sky from north-northeast to south-southwest like a river flowing through the heights of the heavens. Its edge is towards the western horizon and its center rises in the east, at the fringe of our Milky City of stars. On the northwestern horizon, the Pleiades, the Shining Ones, the Taphiti, are preparing for the journey to the underworld. They are to disappear shortly behind the sun and will stay there for a while. The explanation goes that since people of old did not really have an explanation about space, in trying to figure out where exactly the Pleiades went, they invented an underworld. This is probably one of the reasons why this group of stars is so linked to stories of death, rebirth, and ancestors, and used to mark the beginning of the year in some cultures. The Pleiades are a very special group of stars. They are located in the zodiacal constellation of Taurus, 1 degree from the ecliptic, which is the width of your pinky if you hold it at arm's length. That is, if you can find the ecliptic, of course. The ecliptic is an imaginary line. It marks the path of the sun in the sky. Therefore, you can see the Pleiades practically from any place on Earth, any place where you can see the sun. They are very famous. People of old measured the quality of their eyesight by counting how many stars they could see there, probably still 6, even if they are called the 7 stars, as the 7 married a mortal about 2,000 years ago and was demoted from the heavens, according to an ancient Greek legend. Being so bright, packed, and visible most of the time makes them unique among the objects that we can see in the night sky. But what do we see when we look at the sky? I always have been fascinated observing children looking at the sky. First, they see the moon. Then, as they get used to that, they start to see the planets as the brighter dots of light. The Pleiades are among the first stars in children's stories, and they are indeed ciphered in many cultures of the world, almost all of them referencing the cluster. However, one culture above all has given it different names at different times of the year. This is the Maori culture. The following saying can be found in Taumata o te Ramarae, Korangi nui te atua matua, Katuku taku ihi he atua, Katuku taku ihi he tangata. The many stars adorn me, Puanga rehua takurua. They are here, but Matariki only comes once a year, and at the same time each year. It is the sign of the Maori New Year. We shall then await the return of Matariki the Pleiades and watch them rise before the sun after the longest night of the year here in Aotearoa. Until then, we should bid farewell to the Taphiti the Pleiades as they slowly drop from the western horizon into the world of light. Above the Pleiades, orange Aldebaran is also descending from the heavens. Climbing up on the Milky Way, Betelgeuse and the big Egyptian dog Sirius lie on one side of the celestial river, whilst Procyon, the small Egyptian dog, lies on the other side. The three make a beautiful triangle, its tip, marked by Sirius, the brightest star in the sky, points at Canopus Atutahi, the cat star, as I call it, the second brightest in the sky, which, like a good cat, is watching over the earth from above. High in the sky, Canopus marks the midpoint between the center of our galaxy and its edge. The Milky Way then flows down from the sky through the False Cross, the Diamond Cross, and the Southern Cross. The pointer stars hang from it. Beta Centauri and the third brightest star in the sky, and our closest neighbor, Alpha Centauri. Low on the eastern horizon, the Milky Way ends in Sargas, the first brightest star to rise from Scorpius. Theta Scorpii has the traditional name Sargas, which it is believed to be of Sumerian origin. Sargas appears on the flag of Brazil, symbolizing the state of Alagoas. The Milky Way splits the sky in two. Through the northeastern horizon runs the ecliptic, a lower arch, the plane of our solar system, bearing the zodiacal constellations. They intersect the Milky Way right on the horizon. Taurus, just setting, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, carrying the bright planet Jupiter, then Virgo, Libra, and the first stars of Scorpius rising. The ecliptic is, as I said before, the apparent path of the sun on the celestial sphere. It also refers to the plane of this path, which is coplanar with the orbit of Earth around the sun, and hence the apparent orbit of the sun around Earth. The orbits of the planets are also coplanar because during the solar system's formation, the planets formed out of a disk of dust which surrounded the sun. Because that disk of dust was a disk, all in a plane, all of the planets formed in a plane as well. Rings and disks are common in astronomy, and since our eight planets orbit roughly in the same plane, if you ever wonder where to see them in our sky, turn your gaze towards the ecliptic. Chances are that bright stars that shine on roughly the same path where you would normally see the sun in the daytime are in fact planets. Planets are wanderers through the ecliptic, which is exactly what the name Planetos meant in Greek, wanderer. They are following their own avenues in the celestial silence, and their positions are given by coordinates called ephemerides. And since we put astro into biology, or the other way around, you might also wish to know that ephemerides are also some insects in the Amazon jungle that only live one day. Mars and Saturn appear in the late night sky. Mars rises after 11 p.m. a little south of due east. It looks like an orange-red star. Well to its right is the star Antares, also orange but a bit fainter than Mars. Antares is Greek for rival to Mars. Now Mars is brighter than its rival and will continue to brighten as we catch up on it. Over the month, Mars will move down and right as it passes Antares. Saturn is directly below Antares, looking like an off-white star a little brighter than Antares. Saturn stays put through March, rising a little earlier each night. A telescope magnifying 20 times shows Saturn's rings. By the end of the month, Mars, Antares, and Saturn make a large triangle in the east at 11 p.m. Venus, the brightest planet rises due east around dawn. At the beginning of the month, Mercury is below and right of Venus. Mercury sleeps lower as it moves to the other side of the Sun. It disappears mid-month. A total solar eclipse occurs on March the 9th, but it is not seen from New Zealand. The Moon's shadow crosses Indonesia and the Western Pacific. On March 23rd, 24th, the full moon grazes the edge of the Earth's shadow. Around midnight, the top edge of the moon will look a little darker than the lower edge. Back to the evening sky, lower on the eastern horizon and close to the ecliptic, the third brightest star in the constellation of Scorpius is just barely visible. It was the Euphratian Sargas, lying in the Milky Way, just south of Lambda and Epsilon, with which it formed one of the seven pairs of twin stars. As such, it was Maasu. And it might have been with Iota, Kappa, Lambda and Epsilon, the Girtab of the lunar zodiac of that valley, the Vanand of Persia and Vanand of Zogdiana, all meaning the Caesar, Smiter or Stinger. But the Persian and Zogdian words generally are used for our Regulus. In Chorasmia, these stars were Kachman, the curved. Sargas is the most southerly bright star in the Scorpion, closely anchoring the southern curve of the Scorpion's tail, and invisible north of latitude of 50 degrees. The star's southerly position has allowed northern observers to use it visibly as a test of the night sky brightness near the horizon. I said earlier that this time of the year, the Milky Way is splitting the sky into two almost equal sides. We just looked at the part that holds the ecliptic, which in the southern hemisphere, here in Wellington, New Zealand, is located on the north part of the sky. Let's do some star hopping to get to the other side in the south. One of my favorite sports, star hopping, is jumping from bright star to reach fainter stars. Ready, set, go! We'll start just above Virgo's brightest star, Spica, and try to locate Corvus, the raven, one of my favorite constellations. Corvus is now flying on the eastern horizon at 20 degrees of south declination, but 2,000 years ago it lay equally on each side of the celestial equator. Spica and the two stars of Corvus, Algorab and Gienah, are in a line. The other side of the quadrilateral, that is Corvus, Algorab and Kratz, Beta Corvi, make another line that extends all the way to the Grand Omega Centauri globular cluster, which is still on the northern side of the Milky Way. Further down, following the same line, you find Alpha Centauri, the third brightest star in the sky and our closest neighbor. Alpha Centauri and its pointer companion Beta Centauri point at the Southern Cross. Don't be fooled. There are many crosses in the Milky Way. Only one is the Southern Cross. Higher up than the Southern Cross, the Diamond Cross carries a mirror image of the Pleiades. As they prepare for their journey to the underworld, at the fringe of our Milky City of Stars, on the northwestern horizon, the Pleiades, the Shining Ones, the Taffeti, leave behind, here in the southern hemisphere, a doppelganger, a look-alike, fake twin that never leaves the sky. Circumpolar to Wellington, the Diamond Cross can also be found by climbing up the Milky River two-thirds from the side and one-third from the center. And this is exactly where you will find the optical asterism of the Diamond Cross. At the eastern end of it, a pair of binoculars will reveal the Southern Pleiades, which is a group of stars that at first sight look like the letter M to me, Theta Carina Cluster, also called the Southern Pleiades, has an astronomical resemblance to the famed northern star cluster M45 in Taurus, even though the cluster is not dipper-shaped like the Pleiades, is also easily visible with the naked eye, but best in binoculars. Quite young, about 30 million years old, and at almost the same distance from Earth, 500 light years away. And just like M45, the Southern Pleiades is 15 light years across. And finally, on the other side of the Milky Way, in the southwestern sky, the Magellanic Clouds are our neighboring galaxies, circumpolar here in Wellington, and always a little elusive to the red side. The Magellanic Clouds are the best training objects for averted vision. Always look for them a little off to the side while continuing to concentrate on them. On the 1st of March, autumn officially started here in the Southern Hemisphere. It's a time of plenty, of harvest, and the beginning of the spectacular season of stars. Clear and dark skies from Space Place at Carter Observatory here in the Southern Hemisphere.